MacCast, Monday, April 11th, 2005. The MacCast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for the MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam. And this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. All right, it's hopefully everybody had a nice weekend. Mine was pretty nice. I got to spend some time just relaxing for a change, so that wasn't too bad. I did a little work, but not too much. Just kind of took the weekend off and really enjoyed it. So hopefully you had a nice weekend as well. So we got a lot of stuff to cover today, so let's just jump right into it. So if you have a Mac Mini and you have wireless networking on it, you might be looking for a way to extend the range of your wireless network. Well, good news is that a company called Quicker Tech just announced today a new wireless networking antenna for the Macintosh Mini. It will actually also work with any AirPort Extreme system. But the amazing thing about this antenna is that it's going to extend your wireless range up to 1 mile. That is just amazing. If anybody has had an AirPort Extreme network, you know that once you get not too far away from the base station, it starts to drop off. You know, I use one in my house, and it's up on the third floor. I live in a townhouse, and it extends all the way down to my bottom floor and a little ways outside my house, but not much further than that. So this antenna is truly amazing. It pumps out 550 milliwatts of RF power, and the AirPort's native, what's built into the AirPort is 30 milliwatts. So it's a huge boost and a huge jump. There's a link from the show notes. Of course, this power does not come cheap. It is $180 US if you want to buy one of these antennas. But, hey, if you're looking for a way to really extend your wireless networking range, this is the thing to get. Okay, so as any of you who have iPod Shuffles know, the iPod Shuffle has a really cool feature where you can use it just like a hard drive. You mount it on your desktop and you can move files to it and use it for file storage. But one of the things you can't do is just put MP3 files on that portion of the Shuffle and access them from the Shuffle. You actually have to use iTunes and you have to sync your music library in order to be able to play the music off your iPod Shuffle. Well, there is a guy out there who has made, his name is Martin Fielder, and he's made a piece of software called the iPod Shuffle Database Builder. And it makes it possible for you to drag and drop MP3 files onto your iPod Shuffle and not have to use iTunes to manage it. There is a link from the show notes if you want to get a hold of this software. One of the really cool things that this then enables you to do is actually share your Shuffle between multiple computers much more easily. If you have multiple computers and you're using an iPod Shuffle, you probably also know that when you plug it into one computer, it sort of syncs up and locks to that computer's iTunes music library. And if you take it to another computer and plug it in, it alerts you that it will then sync with that computer, but it's going to wipe out all of the music that was stored on it from the previous computer. So this is another great way to get around that. Now, I will say it works with Mac and Windows, but if you're on the Macintosh, I'm going to throw out a big geek alert because it uses a Python script. So you're going to have to be able to be familiar with Python to use it. Apparently, I guess it would also work then with Unix or Linux as well. So it's a link to the show notes, but just another different way to manage your iPod music on your iPod Shuffle and something that may give you more flexibility than what Apple offers you out of the box with iTunes. Okay, so on the last MacCast, we talked about iTunes music store openings in other countries, and one of the countries we talked about was Australia. We had said that the Australian iTunes music store was rumored to be opening at the end of April. Well, it looks like as of today, that's sort of been updated. That rumor's been updated. The Sun Herald is reporting that music industry sources in Australia are saying it's looking more like a mid-June opening for the iTunes Music Store in Australia. So if you're in Australia, you're going to have to probably wait a little bit longer for the Australian iTunes Music Store. So sorry to hear about that. You know, I have said it before on the MacCast that I really enjoy iTunes and the iTunes Music Store, and I hope Apple can quickly roll it out to everybody. I know they're working hard at it, so just hang in there. All right, next up, just a quick little tidbit. Time Magazine is back out with its list of the most influential people of 2005. And once again, Steve Jobs has made the top 100 list for most influential people. So congratulations to Steve, I guess. Okay, next, we've been talking a lot on the MacCast about AppleCare. And we talked about the issues in Florida with Apple not being able to offer AppleCare. And you might want to check out the thread on the forums, forums.maccast.com. There's lots of more information there about what's going on with the state of AppleCare in Florida. Basically, it comes down to Apple just has to apply for a license. And I think the fee is like $500. And they just haven't bothered to do that because there's laws in Florida that you need to be licensed basically as to provide insurance, and that's basically what they consider AppleCare in Florida. Well, now it looks like Washington State's getting affected because Washington State has some additional laws. The Department of Insurance in Washington State is currently reviewing Apple's application to sell AppleCare in Washington, and because it has not gone through yet, Apple has told its Washington-based retailers and authorize resellers to stop selling AppleCare until this gets all sorted out. So it's only going to affect consumers. It does not affect businesses or educational customers. But so if you have AppleCare in Washington, I guess you should feel lucky that you got issued it. And if you are buying a new Mac in Washington State, you are going to have to hold off before you can get AppleCare. The good news is, you are allowed to buy AppleCare up to a year from the purchase date of your computer. Basically, while you're still under the original AppleCare warranty, you can continue to purchase AppleCare and extend your warranty. So hopefully Apple will have this sorted out in Washington relatively quickly. And anyone who's recently purchased a Macintosh up there is able to extend their AppleCare warranty before the original one runs out. Okay, I am a big fan of the Apple Store. I think it's a truly amazing buying experience. If you haven't had an opportunity to visit one, I encourage you to do so if it's at all in your capabilities. If there's one in your area, it's even worth driving to if you take a day trip. It's just an amazing experience. It's just something different, I guess, than any other retail store I've been in. It's, you know, open, it's clean, there's great people there to help you answer your Mac questions. Can't say enough about it. And it looks like now Apple is building its flagship store in Midtown Manhattan. They are building a 25,000 square foot Apple retail store. It's going to be on the lower level of the GM building in New York. That's at 767 Fifth Avenue. Between 58th and 59th Street. If you're in New York, you probably know where that is. I obviously don't, being in California, but there have been some pictures online of the construction site. Not much more than a big dirt hole right now, but should be truly amazing. I know the one in Japan, I believe, is currently the largest one. I don't know how this facility, this 25,000-foot store, compares, but if it's anything like the one in Japan, it's just going to be truly amazing and probably worth visiting. So is anybody else? I'm kind of getting tired of the Tiger updates. Nobody knows what's going on. Apparently there's rumors flying around all over the net. And the latest kind of disappointing news today, I went on to Apple Insider and noticed that Apple's legal department apparently made them take down their posting that said that the latest Tiger build had gone Gold Master. So that's either good news or bad news, depending on how you're looking at it. You know, you could interpret it that Apple is not ready to release Tiger, it's not Gold Master, and they didn't want a false posting out there. Or you could take it to mean Apple's ready to announce Tiger and just trying to dispel any rumors to try and shift focus away from their, you know, to not shift focus away from their announcement, I guess. So anyway, stay tuned. I don't know what's happening with Tiger, and I'm just getting frustrated that there's been no announcement yet, and it seems to be dragging on. But, you know, hold out hope. Maybe we'll hear something this week. The good news is they're running out of days to get Tiger posted in the first half or shipped in the first half of 2005, which is what Steve promised. So, and you know, we all know Steve gets very irate if his promises aren't kept. So they're sure the developers are working very, very hard to make sure that Steve, what Steve said, comes true. All right, next up, it's Monday, so it is time for Daryl's Guide for New Mac Geeks number 3.
This is Daryl's Guide for New Mac Geeks. Tips and tricks for New Mac Geeks by New Mac Geeks. Listen up. Daryl's New Mac Geek tip number 3, the dock. Want to personalize your dock? Here are a few ways. You can add application icons to the dock by simply clicking on the application and dragging it into the dock. To remove application icons from the dock, simply click on the icon and drag it off of the dock. Now this will not delete the application. It will simply delete the application icon from the dock. You can also hide the dock by clicking on the right side of the dock until you see the option Hide Dock. This will hide the dock at the bottom of the screen, and you can mouse over the bottom of the screen to have the dock reappear. You can also change the background of the dock. There is an application enhancer module called ClearDock available. Now ClearDock will remove the semi-transparent white background, so dock icons appear to float on top of the desktop picture. A link for ClearDock will be available in the show notes. This has been Daryl's Guide for New Mac Geeks. Be sure to check us out again next time right here on the MacCast.
All right. Thanks, Daryl. Great tips there for New Mac Geeks. I want to talk a little bit about the Daryl's tips. We've talked a little bit, been getting kind of mixed reviews on this. I think most people really are enjoying these, so we're going to continue to do them. I think Daryl's doing a great job, and I thank him for everything he does. Before anybody jumps on him about the dock, I just want to say that this comes up in my freelance business. I do some Macintosh consulting here and there, and new users are constantly wanting to understand how the dock works, especially people moving over from Windows. So these are some great tips. Even though some of you right now might be thinking the dock is a really basic thing, it's not immediately understandable to people coming over from Windows or even moving up from OS 9 or OS 8.6. So I think this was a great topic to cover. I will say that Daryl is working very hard to cater to some of the more power users out there, and to that end, we have set up a new email address, mactips@gmail.com. If you email that address, that goes straight to Daryl. Email any tips that you have, and especially if you're a power user, maybe tips that'll help bring the new Mac Geeks up to your level. That would be really great, and we'd love to share those, and Daryl's going to do a great job for us delivering them. So send those in, mactips@gmail.com. All right, next up we have a special report from a MacCast listener. Listener Ara has been kind enough to provide for us a 4-part series on how to convert your 35mm and slides to digital photos. So take it away, Ara.
Hi, MacCast listeners. This is Ara Derderian from Mission Viejo, California, and this is the first of a 4-part series on how to scan your 35mm negatives and slides. And this is a real fun way to bring back life to pictures that haven't been seen in years. I promised Adam that I keep each segment to less than 4 minutes, so I can't go into a lot of detail here on the podcast, but I've included a write-up that Adam is posting at his website, mactips.com. And this segment is going to cover the selection of your scanner. There are 5 basic things to look for in a scanner. You want to look for the resolution, image correction and enhancement, the scanning software that comes with the scanner, how the negatives are handled, and price. Think of resolution as the fineness of the scan. The higher the resolution, the higher the quality. But you don't want to go overboard with resolution either. Very high resolution scans create very large files, and those are difficult to deal with in your image processing software. Plus, they make very large files that it's difficult to email as well. Look for a scanner that supports a resolution of 4800 DPI. And DPI stands for dots per inch. Most scanners starting at $150 will support this resolution. Professional scanners start at about $500 and they go up from there. Professional scanners will support higher resolutions, but that's going to be overkill for most of us. Your scanner is going to come with software that improves the scanned image. It'll restore faded colors. It'll remove fingerprints, dust, and scratches. And this is either done in software after the scan is done, or it's going to be done in hardware as part of the scan. Software correction results in a loss of image quality. If the correction is done in the scanner itself, there's no loss in image quality. Hardware image correction is done in higher-end scanners, more pro geared towards the pros. Sub-$200 scanners are going to do this image correction in software. And finally, you can always adjust the image or improve the image in Photoshop as well. All manufacturers include software to scan your images. The most important thing I found in my software package is the ability to scan multiple images and then auto-crop them. I'll typically set up my negatives, I'll hit scan, come back in 15 minutes, and all the scans will be in their own individual file. All the frames will be in their own individual file. Most scanners will also include some sort of image editing software. Most of the time they'll bundle Photoshop Elements, an OEM version of this. So if you don't have software to manipulate your images, this is something you should consider. Then there's how well your scanner will physically handle the negatives or the slides. The ease of scanning your images can greatly be enhanced if your scanner has a slide feeder. Manually placing the negatives into an adapter will add time to the process. But you need to be careful with auto feeders. There are a lot of people reporting that these auto feeders on some of these scanners are more trouble than they're worth. The last thing, believe it or not, I consider this the last thing, is price. There's not too much to say here other than don't be penny wise and pound foolish. If I can see not spending $500 or $600 on a professional scanner, but try not to save $50, or $75 by buying an entry level machine. The results and the time you save will be worth the extra money. Now, let's see, once you've narrowed down your choices, what you want to do is read what other users are saying about the scanners. I go to Amazon.com or CNET.com, even ePinions.com. They've got great user reviews. And I typically will look to see how many of these people reviewing them are Mac users. A scanner getting a great review for its software on a PC doesn't do us any good. And you'd be surprised that there are a lot of good scanners that work great on a PC, but their software, the scan software, is not as robust on the Macintosh. So go ahead and read what other users are saying. And just to round out the discussion, I chose an Epson Perfection 4180 photo scanner. I paid $199 US for it at Best Buy. My first choice was an Epson Perfection 4990 Pro, but I couldn't get my budget office, otherwise known as my wife, to approve the purchase. It cost $599 US. And next time, we'll talk about preparing your slides and negatives before you actually put them into the scanner, and a little bit of prep work will save you a lot of post-work in Photoshop.
All right, great. Thanks, Ara. I hope you guys are going to really enjoy this four-part series. I think it is really cool. It's something a lot of people want to be able to do, is get their old photos into iPhoto so they can manage them, maybe shots that they had before they got their digital camera. And I think Ara's series is really going to help out with that. As he mentioned, I have a link to a full write-up in the show notes, and that will be posted on maccast.com as well. And last thing, Ara does his own HDTV podcast. So if you want to know all about HDTV and home theater, you might want to check that out. You can get to it from the show notes. The website is htguys.com. All right, now just a couple little maintenance things and we'll be out of here. Talked about the iPad promotion, thoughtout.biz. Mike Talmadge is a friend of the MacCast, and he had offered us some discounted pricing on his iPad iPod stand. Those are now sold out. So if you are one of the lucky people to get one of those, congratulations. Actually, one of our lucky users is Kurt, and Kurt had a quick little review of the iPad stand.
Hi, Adam. My name is Kurt Godwin, and I really love the show, and I thought I might contribute a little bit by giving a user review. I've had the original iPad by ThoughtOut, I guess, for about a month now. I purchased it when they offered a special to MacCast listeners, a percentage discount, so I went ahead and picked one up. Got the original, the slate gray silver color that kind of matches my Power Mac, and I was really excited to get it in. I opened it up, and it was very, very heavy. I was surprised at the weight of it, and was really pleased with the quality. And I have a third generation iPod, so it fits nicely in the iPad. One of the first things I noticed, though, was that the FireWire cable, the synchronizing cable, it was, even though it fit through the rubber-coated grommet hole on the back of the iPad, there was very little clearance at the bottom when it was actually attached to the iPod while it was sitting in the cradle. And you had to really do a little bit of work to get it to fit right, to not put too much pressure on it. I didn't want to bend anything or break anything. But, I mean, it works as advertised, and I'm not displeased with the purchase. I think that if you don't have or do not want the Apple iPod cradle, that this is a viable alternative. The only thing I wish, perhaps, is that it had a little bit more vertical clearance for the connector, so I wouldn't feel quite so bad about, you know, the bending that's going on in there. But other than that, I mean, it's really not bad. And I would recommend it if somebody wanted to pick one up. I wouldn't tell them not to get one. It's really a decent product. And like I said, just perhaps another half inch on the vertical clearance, and I would say it'd be absolutely perfect. Thanks again, Adam, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Kirk. I think that is a good, honest review of the iPad stand. It is a really nice product from Thought Out. And as I mentioned before the segment, Mike Talmadge, who is the guy who runs Thought Out, is actually become a friend of the MacCast. He is a MacCast listener, and he is doing some great things. In addition to offering that discount, which we thank him for, he is now going to allow you to support the MacCast through his website. If you are interested in buying one of his products, head over to thoughtout.biz, check him out. He has iPod Shuffle stands, iPod Mini stands, the original iPad stand, and they are working on the iPad version 2. So take a look at what he has to offer. If you're interested in buying one of his products, if during checkout, just in the notes field, you type MacCast, he will know that you are a MacCast listener, and the MacCast will get supported through your purchase. So I thank him for that as well. In addition, the MacCast is going to be giving away an iPad stand, and the way you can win that is head over to the forums, forums.maccast.com, go down to the contest area, and we are looking for the top 10 reasons why a PC user should switch to the Macintosh. Write out your list and get it in by midnight Pacific Standard Time on the 30th of this month. And I am going to review those. I'm going to have some PC users help me out. We're going to look for the most creative, original, and most convincing reasons why a PC user should switch to the Macintosh. And we will pick a winner. And then that winner is going to get their choice of any color of the original iPad. So I thank Mike for all his support, and good luck on the contest. All right, now I need to talk to you guys about Podcast Alley voting. And I want to play a little comment from you from Dan Klass over at thebitterestpill.com, because I think he has a really good perspective on this whole thing.
About Podcast Alley, thanks to everyone who has voted. I'm no longer going to call it voting, but I am going to get behind it, and I'll tell you why I've had a change of heart. So first of all, I'm not going to call it voting anymore, because it's not really – in my mind, it's not a vote. What I do at the beginning of every month, or I try to do – I try to go to Podcast Alley, and I sit down and I say, okay, what podcasts have I been listening to on a regular basis? Because I want to make sure that I am counted.
Counted. You guys get that? Basically, I think Dan has a really great perspective on this. I listened to Dan's podcast, and I went over this month, and I counted in for him. As Dan puts it, I threw my name in the hat for Dan Klass's podcast, The Bitterest Pill. And it's because I listen to it every month. So I want you guys to go over, and you don't even have to throw your name in the hat for this podcast if you're not a regular listener, but definitely go over there and put your name in for the podcast that you listen to. And I'll tell you why this is important. This is important because outside of this little podcasting community we have going, the outside world, when they're first looking in, that's one of the first places they go to find podcasts and get the podcast experience. And so we want to make sure that the shows that everybody are listening to and enjoys listening to are up on that list, so that, because those are going to be the ones that people first start to listen to. And, you know, if the ones that are on that list are not the ones that people are listening to, and not the quality shows that everybody likes, then a lot of people are going to get turned off and maybe not find those other shows that are out there. So the whole podcast community benefits by you going over to Podcast Alley and putting your name in the hat. So please do that if you get a chance. All the podcasters will really appreciate it. Okay, finally tonight I want to mention something that I announced on the last show. Our friends Ray and August, who are the developers of iPodder X, which I think is probably the top podcatching client on the Macintosh. It's the one I use and really enjoy. They are offering discounted pricing to Maccast customers. So if you head over and download iPodder X, and then when you go to purchase it, you can type in the coupon code MACCAST and you will get $5 off iPodder X. So that is available to all MACCAST listeners. So I hope you take advantage of that. All right, that's for the show for tonight. As always, visit the website, maccast.com. Visit the forums, forum.maccast.com. And check out the products that I use and endorse over at shop.maccast.com. As always, if you want to send me email feedback, send it to maccast@gmail.com or call the audio hotline 206-222-2788, 20-MACCAST-8. And the track I'm going to leave you with tonight is a little bit different than what I normally play. This is a song. It's by a MACCAST listener. His name is Joshua Steich. And it is a song called Love Like This. And this is actually, he's not a musician by trait, although I would say after listening to it, he's definitely a musician. But it's a song he put together when he proposed to his wife. And he did all of the work in GarageBand and did all the recording himself. And his 1-year anniversary is coming up, so he sent me this track. He thought it would be really great if his wife heard it on the MACCAST. So I'm going to go ahead and do that for them because, you know, I support Mac geeks in love. Anyway, that's the show for tonight. Hope you enjoy Love Like This by Joshua Steich, and I will see you all next time.
Just you that made me realize it. You are my one true angel. You are my simple savior. Don't know if I can change it. Don't know if this song's too lame, but I never knew there could be love like this. So caring and so true. The luck was born inside of me. The perfect rain against the blue. Never knew there could be love like this. So caring and so true. Luck was born inside of me. The perfect rain against the blue.